I mean, you know, there's not that much. There's very little original old growth left here in British Columbia. Most of it's gone. But, you know, an old growth forest is definitely different. You know, I mean, there's a whole process that, you know, forest goes through different stages, getting to the point of old growth with different species and different stuff. But, you know, an old growth forest has a very tall, dense canopy. And of course, the trees themselves are very big and typically, because of their size, often quite resistant to fire. I mean, the fire will sweep through, but also because they have a very dense canopy. You know, all the branches and leaves and needles high in the trees that shades the forest floor, so you get much less growth of sort of stuff that can serve as fuel in the forest growth. And while you might think forest fires are all about trees burning, often it's moves fastest along the forest floor where there's all that low growth, and that brings it along is often what keeps it moving. And then of course in forested areas, or areas that have been forested or where the trees have been cut down, there's often a lot of, you know, slash and stuff left over from that, combined with the fact that there's lots of low brush and stuff burning, or not burning, growing while the new trees are growing up, that leads to a lot of, again, material that gets, you know, by middle summer is often quite dry and ready to take off with just a bit of a spark.
Now, what used to be talked about was the pine tree beetle.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard about that insect for a while. Now, I had heard, actually, I checked up a bit on the insect, and where it's from is from northern Mexico to Canada and the United States.
Yeah.
And I had heard rumors that it had come from mainland China, but I guess that's wrong. But anyway, it was one thing I checked up on. However, in 2017, 2018, it was more of a concern, and supposedly they said of all the forest fire areas after the forest fire had done, there was evidence from 40% to 50% that the pine tree beetle had some sort of effect on it, or may have been the cause of it. That haven't, in British Columbia, that hasn't really, we haven't really heard about the pine tree beetle for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that is its effects have sort of flowed through the ecosystem, in that it's, you know, spread to places and killed the trees, which is what it does. And some of those trees have been cut down because to sort of make what use they can of them. And, you know, some of them died and some of them have burned. So I think some of its impact is lessening now, just because it is swept through and killed forests and killed trees in the forest. And then once that happens, it either moves on, or I guess perhaps it dies back because it doesn't have trees to find a home in.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, another fact is that we have, in a sense, less fires, but they're stronger. This is the problem that we got there. They kind of go longer. So actually, it's not so much that we have more. The ones that we have are getting stronger,
mm-hmm.
as such. So, I mean, it's... And also, the thing about, it's interesting about, you know, about that so much is the volunteers. A lot of municipalities, in Ontario they have counties, we have municipalities here in British Columbia, they have had trouble getting insurance policy. In some cases, they had to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
There's been one, actually, in... Beaver Lake, which is a bit north of Prince Rupert, in December they actually shut down.
Hmm.
So, and it's funny that we had this problem, you know, with the forest fires, and yet it's sort of under. I mean, it even costs a bit, even if you have a volunteer force to do it, and one. One municipality has a junior firefighter program. When you're 14, you join it. You can be part of it when you're 18, and so on. But I don't. It's sort of interesting to me that I think we have to start having it. That there are. I got it here. So in Canada, we have 90,000 volunteer firefighters, and we have 36,000 firefighters who are paid. Now, in this one, they say number of vacant positions is 15,000. So it would seem that maybe we need more of this. I mean, people don't seem to bring it up that maybe we do need more paid positions or something in this, because if it is a problem, why do we not have, we don't have a lot, it seems. It would seem to me.
I don't know.
So, anyway, and it's interesting that supposedly the proper term is wildfire, because I think a wildfire covers more than just a forest fire. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's usually said to be a wildfire in general. And it says here, forest fire is also, this is Wikipedia, is also a factor, forest management. Now, actually, this is one thing that's been brought up that we have not had. Some people say this, whether it's true or not, that there's been a problem in forest management. In general, they say, well, they used to be able to spot these a lot better earlier on, and we're not doing so. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Have you heard much on this, Meg?
I haven't heard that. I would assume that, you know, satellites and other sort of observation technology like that would be able to pick up on fires quickly. But I don't know much in detail. You know, I'm sort of, you know, thinking more generally about the technology rather than, you know, having researched that. I know there's a forest management issue around the idea that for such a long time, all and any fires were suppressed, which led to the burn or the accumulation of a lot of fuels on forest floors, so that when a fire did happen, there's lots to burn. And there seems to be a lot of discussion and perhaps a shift towards sort of managed burns, which use very low intensity fires to burn off the fuel on the forest floor without actually, you know, significantly affecting the trees themselves or you know, killing the trees. Because generally speaking, trees can be very resilient to fire. It's unless it gets to a certain sort of amount of intensity in which it sort of, which is too much.
Well, it says here, Canada has generally, this is Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Canada has generally stopped performing controlled burns, which help reduce the risk of larger, more dangerous fires. So, I don't know. That's what you were bringing up, really.
Yeah.
In some other wording as such. Do you think we should go back to that? Or like?
Well, it sounds, certainly what I've heard and read about it, it makes sense to do that. You know, it's part of a more natural system. You know, I mean, when you have fully, you know, I mean, fires were all, have most fires are caused by lightning strikes. And so that's always been happening. And so fires have burned through forests. And of course, you know, until recent times, you know, that they would just go, right? They'd start and they'd go and they'd burn until, you know, they ran out of fuel or they got put out by the rain or the weather cooled. But often those fires would be pretty low intensity. And I think one of the things people have noticed and remarked on is that, you know, some more fires in more recent times have been more intense because any fire, as soon as it started, is suppressed and put out. So when a fire does finally get out of control, it runs through areas that have never, you know, that haven't been burned ever, and there's just so much fuel there, you know, branches, dead needles, you know, a thick cover, you know, all that stuff is there to burn, and it burns with a great deal of intensity because there's a lot of fuel.
Well, one thing that says that it gets difficult to what they get per mission for controlled burns, especially from indigenous groups who have been historically performed them, have been disproportionately affected by wildfire. So it's saying that they're not getting but the permission from, I guess, regions or whatever. They want it not done.
Yeah. And my understanding is that attitude is changing. But, you know, you also need to, you know, you need to put money into the fact that if you're going to have this happening, you know, you have to have some people there, you know, managing the whole thing and making sure your little prescribed burn doesn't get out of control. And, you know, I don't know if you know, the money, you know, it's one thing when it comes to fire suppression and putting out fires. It's just like, well, that's an emergency. You just have to spend the money you need to do the task. As with a lot of things, it not always is easy for people to find the money to do preventative things like this.
Well, the other thing
sometimes is very short-sighted.
It says here that 50% are by lightning. So the other 50% are by accidents, human-made accidents. So, I mean, it's gotten so bad, really, last year. Hopefully it won't be as bad this year around. It's interesting, for the Vancouver area, I think it was 2017, it was a bad air quality in this area. I don't remember it being since then as bad as it was in this area, though.
There have been several summers where we've had a lot of smoke. Last year was we didn't get a lot of smoke down here in Vancouver, which was a nice change, because a few of the summers before that we had that. And who knows, we're lucky so far this year. It's been kind of a cool and damp summer for the most part, or spring for the most part. But, you know, we're heading into the hot and drier season as we head into the summer proper, and we'll have to just see what happens.
No, it says there are 150 fires continued smoldering underground over the relatively low snow winter and reignited in 2024. So actually, I just read that now. So it means that it had been going on.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's not good.
No, so if people are interested in finding out more about what's some of these issues and what's going on, the federal government, through Natural Resources Canada, does have the Canadian wildfire wildland fire information website, which has a bunch of information, including fire behavior map showing where fires are burning, another one showing which regions are having fire weather, which is to say the hot, dry weather that often leads to fires. For the most part, BC is looking pretty good. You know, the Okanagan Valley and region in eastern Vancouver Island are, and southwest BC are looking, having a lot of fire weather, but most of the rest of the province is a cool blue. But we see great swaths of northern Canada where we've had big fires in recent years. Northwest Territories and northern Alberta, northern Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and then all across the Canadian Shield through to Labrador, all areas of vulnerability with the weather. Anyway, you can find that. Just search for the Canadian Wildland Fire Information, and you'll find that resource. Pretty interesting maps and everything, lots of information.
So anyway.
All right.
And we got gardening.
I can tell you're not a gardener.
No, I don't mind it. It's fine. I don't really want to do it. It's okay to hear some.
You like to keep your hands clean?
No, I'm in an apartment now, a condo. But
all right, we got Gardening with Embark coming up in just a moment. But before we get to that, we have a song. This is from a new album from Old Man Ludicrous. And this is The Raven and the Dove.
Alphas and Omegas. Alphas and Omegas. Alphas and Omegas. Alphas and Omegas, betas, hear me sigh. Never ask the how, only ask the why. I just said some foolish things that went and made you cry. I'm hiding in the basement and I'm getting pretty high. Spaces in together, they make heartaches and they save. Rarely am I silent, I dip between the waves. Then I croak out angry words like a churlish knave. The raven is the bird of love, the bird of love is brave. I know there are big things I should say about our love. But I need to have armor. Every couple months, you know, I'm angry at Big Pharma. I got in line to get the jab up in the armor. They used to call it art, but now they call it trauma. People on the internet say dumb shit. Almost all my anger is directed at it. Just a place of judgment and a dream of getting fit. My very worst addiction is being stuck on it. But I know I should say about our love, but the beauty of the raven is that he is not the dove. Alpha Omega. Alpha Omega.
Sometimes I think I'm working, but I'm sitting on my phone. Screen time is outrageous since I never leave. On, but true lovers will remain. I know there are big things I should say about our love, but the beauty of the raven is that he is not the dove. I know there are big things I should say about our love.
All right, thank you. That was Old Man Ludica and The Raven and the Dove from his album, She Told Me Where to Go, Old Man Ludica, here on CJSF 90.1 FM. And next up we have Gardening with Embark. Welcome to Gardening with Embark. Welcome, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society.
Hi, nice to be here.
Good. So we are officially into summer.
Officially
finally
started. Yes.
And we have some weather that matches that this week. What are we looking at in the garden this week?
Okay, so as you mentioned, this week is the official start of the summer. Tomorrow, June 21st, the summer solstice, and summer is here. In the garden, we can see most of our alliums, garlics, leeks, and onions. They are into flower.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the time that we gardeners are waiting for harvesting garlic escapes, which if you're a chef, you know that they're very precious, very, very subtle, nice taste of garlic, not too strong. And and if you have planted leeks and went into escapes, that is done, because now you have a wooding center,
mm-hmm.
and there is nothing to eat. So it's just a core, hardcore in the middle. So you lost your leeks.
Oh, okay. So if your leeks are still there,
yep.
You've missed your mark.
You missed it. Yeah. The same with the onions. Yeah. Yep. So now there is a hard stem in the middle. Yeah.
So we're taking all those out. We're looking at our garlics and getting ready to harvest them.
With the garlics, if you want to have fresh garlics, you can pull them out. Yep. If you want to have garlics that you can preserve for the fall, just leave it in the soil until the leaves wilted and turn yellow. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And they'll be fine like that.
Yeah, they will be fine. Yeah.
So how long can you leave them like that?
Well, I will say until the beginning of fall.
Okay.
Yeah, because now, once they are, what we want to prevent is that with the fall comes lots of rainfall.
Yeah.
And we don't want them to get moldy. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to pull before that.
And is that true for other similar sorts of root crops? I mean, I guess not carrots and stuff, but, you know, I guess, you know, you sort of, you know, for us non, you know, gardeners, you sort of think, well, if it's ready, it's got to come out. So I find that really interesting that you can just sort of let the garden or let the garlic wait there.
With the garlic, no problem. With other vegetables like carrots, carrots are biennial. So yeah. In the first year, the plant put lots of nutrients into the root. Mm-hmm. And the second year, they will make the flower. So right. That's why we like to have carrots over the winter. So the stills are edible, but before the spring next year, you need to harvest. Otherwise, it will make a flower. The same with beets, biennial plants. With leeks, yeah, unfortunately, it's all lost. But we have two options. One, to keep the leek so it goes to a nice pom-pom flower, which will be good food for the bees. Mm-hmm. And as well, you can harvest the seeds later if you want to, if you have an organic variety of leeks that you can harvest the seeds.
Great. So we're also looking at getting ready to put some beans in the ground.
Yes, so we still have the last opportunity to put beans, and so we hopefully harvest before the fall, so by the September we can be harvesting.
So have we done a cycle of beans already?
And not yet. We just planted, but because of the weather so changing, wet, dry, most of the beans have, in our garden, most of the beans did not germinate.
Yeah,
so they're rotting in the soil, so now it's... Hopefully, we can plant again and have a harvest before the fall.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Now that we've got some bit of dry weather, we're going to get them in the ground.
Yes.
But we're also getting a little short on time for whether we're going to get a good bounty when they come ready in the fall.
In the fall, that's right. Yeah. So it's just like a try now and hope that everything was well. Yeah. as well, in the garden at the moment, we have planted fava bean.
Yep.
And all those fava beans are covered with a black aphid. Huh. From top to bottom, they are covered with aphids. But we have cabbages.
Is that because of the dampness so far?
Well, regularly the fava bean is very susceptible to aphids, so they just show up.
Yeah.
But those aphids are specific for the fava bean. They don't affect any other kale crop or cabbage crop. Yeah. So cabbage, kales, they are next door, they are just fine.
Okay.
But so don't get too worried about the aphids having in the fava bean.
Yeah.
At the moment, I like to see whether there are ladybugs.
Yeah.
Laying eggs in the fava bean and as well eating all those aphids.
So it's a problem that might take care of itself.
Yeah. It takes care of itself.
Great. And what else are we looking at? I mean, we're also planting some flowers, which.
Yes. I like to plant some pansies from seed, because pansies by the fall they go into nice flowers. Mm. Pansies are plants that stand very well the frost.
Right.
And so over the winter when we have these cold months and dark months, having some flowers in the garden is beautiful.
And with the pansies, we're just putting seeds in the ground and then letting them come up.
Yes. So we just see them very very shallow because they're tiny seeds. Yeah. And they will germinate and we keep watering and keeping an eye on them. And hopefully by fall, they start flowering and they slowly move into winter. And it's lovely to have flowers in winter.
Yeah, certainly.
Together with the snowdrops, so pansies, snowdrops, yep.
So now that the weather's here, and as we said, we're now really into summer, we can expect a lot of hot weather, and sunshine, which is great for our growing, but also, I imagine, is also means we have to be thinking more about taking care of the garden.
Yes. So hot weather, sunny weather means for us gardeners be early in the garden, watering.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you water between 6 and 8 o'clock before this sun really gets too hot,
yeah.
and then you all wait in the afternoon between 5 and 7 o'clock at night. So that's the time to water. So it's very, very busy. Again, I go back always to my schedule twice a week, mm-hmm. watering twice a week, either Tuesdays and Fridays or Mondays and Thursdays, but making sure that for the weekend your plants are being watered. In weekends, over weekends, we get very busy, barbecues, invites, visit here, visit there,
yeah.
and suddenly we forgot to water the garden, and when we realize all the plants are just wilted and requiring lots of watering and care, yeah. As well, I have seen in my garden, in here, cabbage worms.
Mm-hmm.
They are feasting on the cabbages. So all the cabbages have little holes, half of the leaves have gone, disappear suddenly.
Yeah.
So it's cabbage worms.
Okay, what are we looking for to spot those?
So cabbage worms are a tiny green worm with a yellow stripe all around their side. Yeah. And so they are very hungry. So they just eat constantly. So we usually pick them up. We pick them up and we can put in them in the composter if you want to keep it. You can feed your chickens. If you have chickens, can feed the crows or just put in a container with soapy water. And there's a way to control.
And are you picking them off just with your fingers or like do you
use them too? Yeah, I pick with my fingers.
Yeah.
They're quite soft, but we get used to handle insects and slugs and everything.
Yeah.
Kind of creatures in the garden.
It's all part of the ecology of the garden.
Yes. Yeah. The garden is a home for everyone. Spiders, slugs, snails. So we just gardeners get used to handle them. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society and the manager of Embark's...
Gardens. Yes.
I was going to say two gardens.
Here in campus, in Bonavie campus, we have two gardens.
Yep.
One behind the Task One, the Technology and Science Building, and the other one in the Student Union Building.
Right, the Learning Garden.
Yep.
Excellent. And, of course, a number of programs that you're running associated with those gardens.
Oh, yes. So we have a summer cohort, which we are running currently. And in the fall, the last week of September, we will start our fall cohort. We meet for 6 weeks because it's very short.
Yeah.
During that time, we share our experience how to grow and cultivate during those times.
Great. Well, if people want to know more about Embark, how do they find out?
Please find us on our website, embarksustainability.org, or our social channels at hashtag EmbarkSustain.
Great. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark.
Glad to be here.
And that's pretty much the end of our show for today. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Coming up in about 2 minutes is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, coming straight from New York City to your ears via the radio. Do you know what next Monday is a holiday. It is the Canada Day holiday.
And the building is closed to the uninitiated of realities here.
Yeah, it's a bit it's a bit weird and a bit lame, if you ask me, that they just close for anything practically here. Not to mention it's a student union building with an early bedtime at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. I mean, it's not the worst thing.
So yes, but you and I aren't in our 20s. When I was in my 20s, I stayed up to even on a regular weeknight till 1 o'clock just because, why not?
No, I do still, actually, but anyway. So 2 weeks.
Yep.
Anthony Fauci was interviewed on the competition CBC Radio.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to get a hold of the book, The Real Anthony Fauci, a bit controversial, by Robert Kennedy Jr. And somebody has done a website. Not a website, but a YouTube channel. It's called Debunk the Funk, and he's going to spend 3 hours going over the book, and I'll see that too, how the book gets things wrong. So
right.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to read the entire book, And I'm also going to be looking at his thing and other people that have said things about it. And I'll come to my own conclusions for it.
All right. Well, it should be interesting. A lot of people love him and a lot of people hate him.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of weirdness around the whole reaction. That's it. We're out of time. Democracy Now! Is coming up in a few moments. Tune into the show every morning at 10:00.